budget presentations by the Department of Commerce and Explore Minnesota Tourism. Members, just for a point of reference, if you go to the Commerce Department section of the budget booklet, the parts listed from on pages 25 to 36 are not part of our purview in this committee. They're in the Alan Anderson's committee, so we won't be covering those today, but we'll be covering all the rest of the stuff that's on that page. So, Commissioner Wilson, would you like to come to the table? We don't have a quorum yet, so I will announce that when that does happen, but you may proceed. We're taping it so they can all listen to it if they want.
I'm sure they will.
Thank you, Senator Tomasoni, and members of the committee. Appreciate the opportunity to visit with you today relative to the budget on the Commerce Department. First off, I want to review just very quickly where we were a few years ago versus today. We have reduced the amount of space in the department by 25%, reducing our expense by $440,000. Telephones, maintenance of equipment's been reduced, paper all the way, so that today what you'll find is a recommendation for a budget that with an increase of a few people and about 700,000, Dennis Munkwitz will have the details, but with some increase, we'll still be several million dollars below where we were 4 years ago. But one of the ways that most importantly that we achieved the reduction was through the implementation of 14 major systems in the department that increased productivity significantly. Best example probably is two in the energy area. We have introduced a LIHEAP system that distributes $80 million to the people around the state to reduce their winter bills where they qualify. That's been automated so that the money gets to the people more quickly and more money gets there and less in the administration. Same way with the mandated filings of documents, which were in the millions of pages prior. Almost all those are now received electronically, stored and available to people that need them rather than our making copies. So a lot's been done to make the department much more efficient than it's been in the past, and we're pretty proud of the increased productivity of the staff, which I believe is very, very strong all the way across the board. And I'd like to ask Dennis to join me to present the details of the budget.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Dennis Munkwitz. It's spelled M-U-N-K-W-I-T-Z, and it's pronounced just that same way. So with that, I'm going to quickly walk through our budget. As the chair suggested, a large part of our budget, about 70% of our budget, is in the energy and telecom area. And that is under Alan Anderson's jurisdiction, and we did a budget overview last week in that committee. So I'll be covering the remainder of the budget, which is very diverse. It covers a lot of different programs in the department. So it's my intent to walk fairly quickly through those programs, and then we'll get to the change items that I think are the real issues that you'll want to hear about, the proposed changes that we'll be making for our budget. So,
and Mr. Munkwitz, just for the committee members' sake, if you have a question during Mr. Munkwitz's presentation, please ask it at the time that it comes to you so that we can cover it right when you're thinking about it and while he's talking about it. Right? Okay. That doesn't mean you can't go back later on, though.
Mr. Chair, I'll continue then. The commissioner spoke briefly about the department. I won't walk through what our mission is, but you can see it there. We do regulate several industries. We do a lot of different things in the department, and I'll get into the details of each of those programs in a few minutes here. Moving on to the FTE slide. You can see that we have about 313 employees. This committee has jurisdiction over about 240 of those employees. You can see the breakdown in that chart there. You'll notice that energy and telecom has about 70 employees, but the rest of those employees would be under the jurisdiction of this committee. If you turn to the next slide, you'll see that we're projecting our base FTE count is about 313. We expect that in 2008 we'll increase that by about 10, and we'll talk about that in the change items at the end. And in 2009, we'll see about 320 FTEs. Moving on to the expenditures by the program area, we have a total expenditure in the department of about $334 million. Again, the large portion of that, $231 million, is in energy and telecom. That's mostly related to the heating and energy assistance program that the commissioner mentioned. The rest is broken down by the different programs. You can see the breakdown there. Market assurance is about $21 million. The petrol fund is about $32 million. Financial exams about $20 million. The next slide shows a breakdown of our expenditures by the funds. You can see that, again, the majority of our funding does come from federal government. Again, that's for telecom. For energy and telecom. We get a very small piece from the Workers' Compensation Fund for some fraud work that we do. General fund is about $54 million for the next biennium. Petrol fund we expect to be about $32 million. And special revenue is about $54 million. That's the programs that we cover under our special revenue funding is the weights and measures program. The insurance fraud program, auto theft prevention program, and then one of the telephone assistance programs is covered there as well. The next slide is a big impact slide, something that the committee should be aware of. We do take in a tremendous amount of revenue to the state. We expect in the next biennium to collect $462 million. You can see we have a breakdown there of how we expect to collect that. About $213 million will go directly to the general fund, and the breakdown is listed there. Unclaimed property will take in about $98 million. Securities registration, $68 million. Licensing, $21 million, and then all other programs, the balance of $26 there. The dedicated receipts, again, the majority of that would be federal funds. In the special revenue funds that I talked about. The next slide, then, I'm going to focus on the gray part of the bar there. That's our general fund revenue versus expenditures. As you can see, we expect to take in, like I said, about $213 million into the general fund, and we will get back about 25% of that in appropriations if we pass the governor's bill as proposed. So, again, we generate a lot of income to the general fund that goes towards a lot of the programs that are outside of the agency. If there's no questions on that, I'm going to move into the divisions and talk more specifically about those and the programs within. The first one is the Financial Examinations Division. This division licenses and maintains financial solvencies of the state's banks, credits unions, finance companies, etc., and insurance companies. The next slide reflects what we expect their expenditures to be for the next 2 years, about $19.5 million. There's two programs within the Financial Exams Division. An insurance program and the bank and credit union examinations program. We expect we'll spend about 55% of the budget for insurance and the balance on the bank and credit union exams. The next slide kind of breaks down how those expenditures are funded. As you can see, we expect general fund covers about a little more than $6 million of those expenditures. And the special revenue fund covers the balance of $3.4 million for a total of about $19 million there. And this division has about 70 FTEs projected for the next biennium. The next program I'll talk about is the petrol fund. A lot of folks may not know what this program is all about. It was created back in 1987 to help folks that needed some help with removing underground storage tanks. It could be abandoned gas stations, abandoned fuel tanks that were at people's homes. Since the program's inception, they've reimbursed up to almost $380 million. Last year alone, we reimbursed $12.3 million. And to date, we've served about 13,000 Minnesotans there. And I believe Senator Metzen has a question.
Senator Metzen.
Well, I just this is a $30 million biannual spending for the cleanup, and I'm just wondering how the $30 million compares to the need out there and the needs and the, what are the requests per year. You know, in other words, you get $15 million a year to spend. Are there needs of $50 million a year, and are we making inroads into this? Obviously, we are if you spent $380 million over the years, but are we catching up or are we close?
Mr. Chair and Senator Metzen, absolutely. I don't think we ever deny anybody's request for this program. And in fact, it's diminishing. You know, each year goes by, there's fewer and fewer of these incidents where these tanks still exist. So the expenditures, if you looked at, you know, the last 10 years, you see that there's a trend downward, that the demand just isn't there for this anymore. So the program scheduled to sunset in 2011. It's been extended several times, but we're meeting all the demand that's out there.
So, Mr. Chairman, by 2011, you might have it licked or closer.
Mr. Chair and Senator, I would hope so. You know, somebody may be here saying that we could expand the program purpose to cover a different area. That's been done in the past as well, but I would expect that at some point it's going to have to go away. There just isn't going to be the need.
Mr. Monkowitz, this is funded by what?
This is funded by a special fee that's collected about once a year. There's a special fund set aside, the Petroleum Release Tank Cleanup Fund, special fund. When the balance in that fund gets below $4 million, there's a trigger that blinks on a 2% or a 2 cent per gallon fee on every gallon of gas that's sold in the state.
Is it a fee or a tax?
Well, we call it a fee. Mr. Chair, that blinks on for 4 months per law. And during that four-month period, we collect about $25 million, and that's usually enough to maintain the program for about 12 months.
Okay. And Mr. Chairman, it legitimately does blink on and blink off. It's not on.
Mr. Chair and Senator Metzen, when it blinks on, by law, it has to blink on for 4 months.
Yeah.
And then it blinks off. And over the course of the last 4 or 5 years, we've only had to blink it on once a year for that four-month period.
So it's not the full year. Okay, thank you.
And for committee members, there's a chart on page 16 of the budget book that shows that the applications received and the applications approved are just about the same number. But he wasn't doing it, so it's not your fault.
Mr. Chair, I should mention, I'm following the same order that the budget pages are in by program, but a lot of the information that I have here is obviously some summary level of what's reflected in the budget books.
That's fine. Instead of a quorum is present. Okay, go ahead, Mr. Monkowitz.
The next slide then just shows the expenditures breakdown. We get direct expenditures of about 7% or $2.2 million to operate the program. The remaining 93% is an open appropriation that's in law, and that's to cover the cost of all of the claims that we process. So that's a breakdown of how the money is spent in the program. And the next page talks about what I just said. You know, it's all a special revenue fund, and there's about 10 and a half FTEs in this program. The next area I'll talk about is the administration division. We expect our expenditures will be about $10.6 million in the next biennium. And this area covers the commissioner's office, our IT people, our HR people, fiscal folks, communication types, and the unclaimed property program. The expenditures in FTE by activity, you can see on the next slide. We expect that admin accounts for about $4 million of the budget there, and IS and unclaimed property accounts for $1.2 each year. We have a breakdown of our FTEs there. IT, you can see we have about 9 employees, unclaimed property a little over 5, and all others is about 35. Within that 35, the fiscal people are like 13 of them. The commissioner's office and in communications, legislative is about 9. HR's 3. So if there's no questions there, I'll move on to the market assurance division. This division has a change item that we'll talk about in a little bit here, but their purpose is to maintain public confidence in the financial services sector. And they do that by regulation of insurance, real estate, securities, franchising, and a few other things. Their expenditures are expected to be about $20.8 million for the next biennium.
Excuse me, Mr. Monkowitz, have you sent Senator Metzen his unclaimed property check yet? Or?
Mr. Chair, I haven't seen the necessary paperwork yet.
Nor have I seen the money, but let's
standard response.
Talk to Wilson and Sexton about this. Let's get this over with.
Well,
let's get this done. Right? Besides up it or?
Mr. Chair and Senator Metzen, it is a fairly, my understanding of what your claim is about, it's a fairly rigorous exercise that folks have to do to prove that you are entitled to the money.
Could I offer you a commission or a dead
Mr. Chair and Senator Metzen, there's folks out there that will retain 10% of it, and they'll do the work for you. But
just bring it down to my office. I'll do that for you.
Okay.
Senator Dibble.
Oh, I was just wondering, Mr. Chair, if Senator Metzen has so many different bank accounts squirreled away that he forgot about one and it showed up on that list.
Okay.
Sorry, okay, Mr. Chair and members, the market assurance expenditures, as I said, they're laid out there in the pie chart. We cover several different areas here. The insurance fraud unit that was created by this body, I believe 3 or 4 years ago, is part of that division. We obviously have an investigative division that works on issues within the industries that we regulate. Registration and analysis, that's the securities registration that I mentioned earlier, really brings in about $68 million in revenue to the general fund. And then our licensing unit that license some 15, 20 different industries is also part of this division there. Market assurance expenditures by fund, majority is general fund, a little over $6 million each year. Special revenue fund, $3.4 million, and the workers' comp special revenue fund is just under $1 million. And again, that's a piece that we get from that fund for workers' comp fraud that we work on in our agency. And this division will have about 89 FTEs in 8 and 9. I will skip the next 5 slides, I believe. Those, as the chair suggested, aren't under the jurisdiction of this committee. But I want you just to have it there so you have a perspective of the agency in whole. The last program that I'll talk about is the Weights and Measures Program. Again, this is something that reflects the diversity of the agency and the work that we do. I think everybody in here has probably been touched by the work that's done in this division. They do the monitoring at the gas pumps to ensure you're getting what you're paying for. They measure or test the scales in the grocery stores. And they do all kinds of that work for folks throughout Minnesota, as well as several other states. Also look to them to provide some of these services. Their budget, their expenditures expect to be a little over $3 million in each of the next 2 years, and they'll have about 33 FTEs.
You ever find any gas pumps that aren't accurate?
Mr. Chair, we can certainly ask the director that, but it's my understanding that it's very, very, very rare that...
I'll share about 6%
Where are these pumps so we know not to go there?
Yipping.
Chisel.
Go ahead, Mr.
Mr. Chair and members, the Weights and Measures program is funded exclusively from the Special Revenue Fund. This was a change that we worked on a few years back. Historically, the program was funded majority from the general fund in a piece from the Special Revenue Fund, but a couple years ago, we worked with the legislature to move all of our funding to the Special Revenue Fund by the dedication of an additional amount of money for every 1,000 gallons of gas that are produced in the state, that are sold in the state, there's a $1 fee on that. The fee goes, 81 cents of that dollar goes to the Special Revenue Fund for us to operate the Weights and Measures program. The remaining 19 cents goes to the general fund. So that was a change that we worked out a few years ago. It used to be a lot less than 81 cents.
But the wholesalers pay that? Who pays that?
The wholesaler pays?
The $1 fee for every 1,000. Or does the retailer pay that? Who pays that?
Every month the revenue tax,
Mark, who's paying the dollar though on the per 1,000 gallons is the question.
Mark,
is that the is that the retailer, the distributor? Mr. Chair, it was my understanding that it's the distributor that pays that dollar. But
Mr. Chair,
Mark is
members.
The expert.
Yes, it
say
is
your name for the record, Mark.
Mark Buccelli, Director of Weights and Measures. Yes, so that money is from the distributors that pay that 81 cents on the every 1,000 gallons.
Okay, it's 81 or is it a
they
buck?
Pay,
they pay a buck.
81 cents out of the dollar. It's a total is a dollar, and we receive 81 cents on that dollar. The other remaining 19 cents goes into the general fund.
Okay, all right.
Who does the scales at the meat markets?
Weights and Measures does.
Yeah, we had a guy at South St. Paul, a multimillionaire. You'd put the meat on there, and he forces the finger down on that thing.
He made a lot of dough that way. But
he can't weigh the thumb. Though.
He had a sore thumb, but he...
Okay, go ahead, and either one of you.
Mr. Chair and members, then we're kind of through our programs. We'll move into the change items then. There's four change items that this committee will consider. The first one would be the compensation adjustment that the governor's built in across all agencies' budgets, the 2% in each of the next two fiscal years. You can see there that we expect that increase to equate to a little over $1 million for the biennium for the department. But of that, we expect we'll be able to collect back through our assessment ability, 500, 600 million of that. So the agency is charged by law to assess out the costs of the regulation of certain industries. So any costs that we have related to energy and telecom, we're able to bill those back to the companies, as well as we do the same for any exams that we conduct in the insurance and in banking world as well. So the net cost to the general fund would be just under $500,000 or $500,000 for the agency for 8 and 9. If there's no questions on that change item, then I'm going to ask the deputies to come up and talk about the change items for market assurance and financial examinations. Pat Nelson is joining us.
Welcome, Mr. Nelson.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Pat Nelson. I'm the Deputy Commissioner for the Market Assurance Division. I have one slide or one change item before you today. It's quite simple. The change is to add 7 new investigators to the Market Assurance Division at a cost of $600,000. $1,000, and we propose to pay for that by expanding the cap on the current mutual fund fee from $25 million to $25.6 million. The investigators are needed in two areas. The first, for want of a better term, I'm calling it the senior team. As you are well aware, the first of the 79 million baby boomers turned 60 last year. Estimates I've read indicate they have about $8.5 trillion to invest, and over the next 40 years, they stand to inherit about $7 trillion more from their parents. So you have a demographic wave with a quintile as a group that has a lot of money, and we suspect that there will be a lot of activity for persons engaged in financial fraud to go after that opportunity. Right now, it's important to know we don't turn anybody away, but I think it would behoove us to develop some expertise on a multidisciplinary system. Right now, we have basically our investigators are divided by industry type, and the concept here is to try and pull them together and try and understand the different scams that are designed to attract senior dollars. And we think this is an important area, and one of the principal reasons is if you are defrauded as a senior, you don't have a lot of time to make it up. And so it's particularly financially devastating to this group of citizens. The other three investigators are for the real estate team. There's been an explosion of work there lately. We expect it to continue for a while, and so we need some more resources in that particular area.
Mr. Nelson, why is there a cap on the filing fees?
Mr. Chairman, that was put in, I think, about maybe 4 years ago in the early 2000s. They think the industry wanted to control the amount of taxation or fees on that particular fund. But we currently, it's kind of a difficult deal for us to administer because we collect the money currently, and then we have to send back refunds. This particular industry, many of them use a third-party intermediary to file the mutual fund registrations with us. So sometimes we don't even know how to break it down.
I'm confused, though. If you can collect $30 million on mutual fund filing fees, why wouldn't you do it? I mean, I think most of these are from outstate anyway, aren't they?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Most of the burden of this, in fact, principally all of it, is exported to the fund holders in general. So it's not, the incidence of the tax isn't solely on Minnesota residents. Although, to the extent a Minnesotan holds assets in a mutual fund, some small portion of this would be their burden. But as the latest figures I have from the ICI, there's about $10 trillion invested in mutual funds. So when you spread that amount of money over that amount of money, it's very, very small.
But I still haven't understood why we have a cap. Is it something we did in law?
Yes, Mr.
Okay,
Chairman.
So if we changed it, what would the effect be? I mean, do you have an estimate, for example, of how much could it actually be collected if there were no cap?
I think our current estimate for the fiscal year that we're in now is $32 million. And it does vary by year, but it has been growing as people save more in mutual funds. So we end up returning about, well, whatever 32 minus 25 is.
Mr. Chair,
$7 million.
For fiscal year 6, we collected $32.2 million and had to refund $7.2 million. That's the highest that we've ever had to return. Years previous to that, since the cap was put in place, on average, we've refunded about $2.5 million. We're on track this fiscal year 7, you know, with 7 months under our belt. We're projecting that we're probably going to collect at about $34 million this year and would be looking at refunding $9 million. Through January, we've collected close to $23 million already. So in another $2 million, we'll hit our cap.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Any more questions of Mr. Nelson?
Kevin Murphy, Deputy Commissioner for Financial Exams, will join us then.
Mr. Murphy, welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Kevin Murphy, Deputy Commissioner of the Financial Exams Division. Our division deals with banks, credit unions, finance companies.
Remember, this is page 14 in the budget book. Okay, go ahead.
We deal with banks, credit unions, the solvency of insurance companies. We do the licensing for mortgage companies, and you've been reading in the media recently a lot of troubles in that industry, and one of the change items we're going to propose is to intensify the regulation of the mortgage industry, and one of the pieces to that effort will be on-site examinations of mortgage companies by our people, and we would charge for those examinations. So we've budgeted 3 new examiners for 2 years for totaling about $400,000. So we would spend more money and then turn around and collect that back from the mortgage companies that we examine. We have another small change item. We license credit service organizations, which are licensed entities which purport to help people improve their credit ratings. And it's a fairly tedious process to license one of those. The fee is currently $100. We're going to raise it to $1,000, so there'll be a small increase in revenue from that change.
Who pays that fee?
The entities that are licensed, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. And these are generally what type of businesses?
They tend to be small organizations, 2 or 3 or 4 people, and sometimes they're also in other kinds of businesses, but they try to help people that are having trouble with their credit, kind of clean up their credit score so they can borrow money more cheaply. The statute is very complicated, a lot of requirements on the agreement that they use, so our licensing process is fairly tedious, so we're trying to match up the revenues approximately with the kind of effort we expend licensing these things.
And is this change in the fee, is this something your department can do without legislative authority, or do we have to give you the authority to do it?
Mr. Chairman, this is a legislative item. Fee is in statute. It's been $100 for about 1 million years, I expect.
Million times of no. Any questions of Mr. Murphy? Senator Sparks.
Mr. Chair and Deputy Commissioner Murphy, under the new residential mortgage lending reform, that money would go for the 3 new examiners, which would be over and above the 70 full-time employees that your department currently has?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Sparks, yes, that's correct.
Mr. Chair and Senator Spark, can I just clarify? The numbers that I talked about that reflect in my presentation include those change items. So it wouldn't be 3 more on top of whatever the number was I threw out. I think it was 70.
Okay.
That includes the 3 new people.
Okay. Thank you. That helps clarify that.
Mr. Murphy, is this a new crime? This mortgage fraud that you're talking about, this?
Mr. Chairman, this has been soaring, I guess, over the last 2 or 3 years. And something's been simmering for a while, and it's finally coming to the surface now with real estate prices flattening out and declining in some areas. So the fraud is fairly rampant, we believe.
So it says here, for example, making mortgage fraud a specific crime in Minnesota. Are we changing something somewhere so that it has a different treatment in law now?
Mr. Chairman, we have you'll be seeing a bill this year to revamp the regulation of mortgage companies. And under the current scheme, we We license mortgage companies, and we license individuals that operate as independent contractors. And becoming clear to us that it's far too easy for people to get into this business. There are a lot of fly-by-night people that operate, and when we figure out they're doing bad things, we go to check them out, and they basically skip town. They don't have any skin in the game. So going forward, our proposal would require that each licensee would be a corporation or other business entity. We would have a substantial net worth and or a surety bond requirement to ensure financial responsibility. We would have mandatory training for loan officers. The licensees would have to maintain a roster of all the people they employ as loan officers, including when the training was completed and when the background checks were conducted, and that information would be available to the Commerce Department on demand. Commerce Department also would get authority to examine these companies as needed and charge them for the examinations. And the last leg of our proposal would be to make mortgage fraud a specific crime in Minnesota with substantial penalties. And we're doing something similar to what they did in the state of Georgia. It just seems like when we do encounter these situations, we need to make sure we have the wherewithal to punish these people and hold them accountable.
So is Georgia the only other state that has this?
Mr. Chairman, I believe they were one of the first ones, but I believe several states are considering similar proposals as what we are now. This problem is nationwide, and it's fairly serious.
Okay. Anything further? Okay. Thank you very much.
Mr. Chair, that concludes our presentation. Unless there's any other questions, we'll be finished.
Any questions of the Commerce Department? Okay. Thank you very much. We appreciate
Thank you,
it.
Mr. Chair and members.
Mr. Edmund here. Answer's yes. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Edmund.
Good afternoon, Edmund. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee.
Explore Tourism in Minnesota.
Yes. It's a fun agency. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm John Edmund, Director of Explorer Minnesota Tourism. I'm going to give a very brief overview of the budget recommendations for our agency. I'm going to give you just a little bit of background as to where these recommendations came from, and then I'd be happy to answer any questions that you have. I believe a copy of my presentation, a PowerPoint, is currently being circulated. Feel free to stop and interrupt me and ask any questions as I go along. For those of you that were there when I gave the agency overview, I'm just going to quickly provide a bit of an overview and a foundation for these recommendations about Explore Minnesota Tourism. As you recall, Explore Minnesota Tourism is an agency whose mission is to promote and facilitate travel to and within the state of Minnesota. We market Minnesota domestically as well as internationally to consumers, tour operators, groups, and travel agents. And our target markets are primarily Minnesota, with core markets in the upper Midwest as well as in Canada. Now, our agency, the core functions of our agency, there's really four. One is in the area of communications, which involves media relations, promotions, publications, and our work on the web, exploreminnesota.com. Another main area is marketing and research. That's where we do our traditional and non-traditional advertising and consumer research. Another main area is industry relations, where we have offices in Duluth, Brainerd, Thief River Falls, Mankato, and the Twin Cities. That's where we do a lot of our cooperative marketing, work with the regions, our partnership grants, and our interagency efforts. And then the last main area is operations and consumer services, which is the area that covers the travel information centers, the call centers, and all of the costs associated with fulfillment of traveler requests. Our primary goals, and I won't go through these in detail.
Mr. Edmund, are you maybe you're going to cover this later, but who are You said partnership grants here. Who are some of your partners?
Partnership grants are to nonprofit organizations in communities throughout the state, such as convention and visitors bureaus, chambers of commerce, regional tourism organizations that apply to the state for partnership grants, which they match on a 60% private sector, 40% state basis. And what it does, it allows communities to market the unique products in that community in markets that make sense versus that broad Explore Minnesota brand. So it's a very effective way for us to market different parts of the state. The goals are obviously very broad. I think it's in your packet. It's to affect leisure and hospitality, grow sales. There's a chart there that shows that the industry is about a $10 billion industry in the state of Minnesota and growing. We try to generate leisure and hospitality sales taxes. In 2005, we generated about $628 million to the state, money that can be used for other high-priority programs. And there are about 242,000 leisure and hospitality jobs in Minnesota. And those are some of the broad goals. We have a lot of specific goals related to tactics, but those are the broad things that we try to influence. Now, our current budget in fiscal year 07, just to give you a foundation for what we're going to talk about for the next biennium, we're at about an $8.7 million base budget for Explore Minnesota Tourism. In addition, the legislature last year challenged us and provided $1 million in public-private enhancement funding. That's only available after we secure private sector match. So we have the 8.7 budget plus the $1 million in enhancement funding. Also included in our budget last year in fiscal 07 was $1.7 million for the Film and TV Board Snowbait program, and that totals $11.4 million for fiscal year 07. Now, just speaking for the EMT portion of the budget, that's broken down roughly into five areas. The marketing and the research, that's the biggest chunk of the dollars. That's the core of what we use to try to sell Minnesota, about 45%. Customer service, 18%, which is fulfilling consumer information requests. Operations, 17%, a lot of fulfillment. The industry relations and grants is about 15%. Anticipating a question about that, that's also staff. In there, the grants themselves is about 10% of our total budget. We try to keep it at about 10% that goes back to the communities in the form of grants. And then communications, 5%. So that's kind of where we are right now today. As far as the recommendation for the next biennium, we have, as I mentioned to you before, an Explore Minnesota Tourism Council, which is represented by 28 different individuals, organizations throughout the state. And they worked hard this last summer to try to recommend increased funding for Explore Minnesota Tourism. The reason, even though our funding increased last year for the first time, since I've been director for 6 years, our budget has pretty well gone south, but we were able to increase it last year. But even with that increase last year, our budget has gone from 25th to 29th in the United States. That's with an increase. The reason is, not everyone else stood still as well. Other states did increase their funding in tourism. We're being outspent by our major competitors such as Wisconsin, Illinois, Michigan, et cetera. So the council recommended increased funding. They recommended that we design any increase to leverage partnerships and innovation, and that any increased dollars that we were to receive would go specifically towards marketing. And so they, through us, passed this recommendation on to the governor for his consideration.
Senator Saxon.
Mr. Erdman, we slept from 25th to 29th in our tourism budget. Could you, you probably said this before, but in terms of tourism in Minnesota and dollars, do you have any rank as to how we rank in the United States in terms of the dollars that we derive from tourism in any way, shape, or form, gross or?
Mr. Chair, Senator Saxog, yes, I don't have that information with me. We actually did a comparison that we presented to our council last summer to compare where we are in budget and where we are in economic impact. Our economic impact is about $10 billion in total leisure and hospitality sales. We're a little bit above the fold in terms of we're above 25. I don't exactly, but we do a little better in total economic impact relative to where our budget is. Our budget is lower than the impact we have in the ranking. I'll have that information, and Mr. Chair, Senator, I can get that to you to answer it more specifically after this hearing.
Did you ever get the FTE question answered that we had the last time?
About how many of them are full-time and how many are part-time?
242,000 people in the industry, yeah.
In the industry?
Yeah.
Yes. In fact, Mr. Chair, we were researching that and discussing that today. I just asked my staff. We have a letter that we've got drafted right now that answers that question. It's really hard in the revenue statistics to differentiate between full and part-time. So according to some of the information we have, we cannot break that down as to how many are full-time and part-time. You also asked some questions regarding casinos and all that fit into that, and we have some answers on that as well.
Okay. Senator Fischbach, did you have a question?
Mr. Chair, thank you. I guess, and tell me if you're going to answer this later, but can you explain the snowbait program? I guess I'm looking at this page, and I'm not quite getting it. I'm looking, and maybe I went ahead. Maybe I got ahead of you. So if you're planning on explaining it, I'll wait. But I was just looking at this, and I'm not quite understanding this program.
Mr. Edmonds.
Mr. Chair, Senator, I don't mind jumping ahead to that question. In fact, for that answer that I give that is inaccurate, we do have someone from the film board here. But very briefly, the snowbait is a program designed to lure production and jobs and business to the state of Minnesota, film and TV. There was a snowbait that was in existence several years ago that went away, as well as did a lot of the film that was being done in the state of Minnesota. So the legislature last year provided $1.7 million through the budget of Explore Minnesota to attract that additional film and TV production in Minnesota. Those dollars have pretty much been committed, will be used by the end of this year, and the governor felt that that's an important program, so he wanted to continue to put a line item for snowbait or the next biennium. That's a very short answer to your question.
Mr. Chair, thank you very much, because it helped explain it to me. But I'm wondering, what is our return on that? If we put the 1.7, what kind of dollars are we generating with film production in Minnesota?
Mr. Chair, Senator, actually, if I don't mind, Lucinda, he's here from the Minnesota Film Board, and she could probably give you a little more detail. I don't mind diverting and answering that question. Stepping forward.
Hi, I'm Lucinda Winter. I'm the Executive Director at the Minnesota Film and Television Board. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, just to reiterate sort of what John said and answer your question a little more fully, what we have in snowbait is a production incentive in the form of a rebate, as opposed to some states that have a tax credit. Of the 50 states in the union, there are three that do not have an incentive, three or four depending on what month of the year it is. But our neighbor, Wisconsin, is enacting an ambitious one that will go into effect in June of this year, their fiscal. For example, but in terms of return, I can't give you the numbers yet on the 1.7 because so much of what's in the hopper right now is we're now looking at people who have asked for reimbursements, and we'll be getting numbers shortly. It's hard to pin one number on it. I can get you good, solid numbers on what we have already. I can give you some recent anecdotal numbers. When Prairie Home Companion came to St. Paul, they dropped about $2 million into the St. Paul economy in the 8 to 12 weeks they were there. When North Country came to the Iron Range, they spent about, and this was a Bob Isaacson at the state did this analysis for us. The Iron Range resources gave a one-time $140,000 incentive to them.
$250,000.
Yeah, in real dollars, it came out to $140,000, $150,000. That was the max that they had set.
What does that mean, real dollars?
Well, what was actually rebated to Warner Brothers was about $145,000.
Okay.
And that Bob figured out that it was about $5 million back to the Iron Range. Very recently, we've just had a feature run through Snowbait. It was called Older Than America, shot in Cloquet, wrapped in December. She will receive, she's just turned in her request for reimbursement. It will be somewhere in the neighborhood of $150,000, and they spent about $750,000 in Cloquet in Carlton County.
And Senator Fischbach, we think that had this program existed when North Country was shot and there had been more incentive, that they might have shot the whole film here. Instead, they went to New Mexico and did about half the film in New Mexico because of the incentives they got in New Mexico. So.
Right.
Well, and Mr. Chair, that was going to kind of be my follow-up, but you answered it a little bit. I was going to ask about, because the two out of the three that you mentioned, Prairie Home and North Country, were about Minnesota. I mean, yep. they had some connection, and so I was going to ask, right, what other kinds of things are there?
Sure. Yeah, and that's a good question. That's a very good question, because we have a broad incentive, as do most states now, that covers not only feature production but also television series, commercials, documentaries, and music videos. And in our hopper right now in Snowbait, we have about three commercials, two or three TV series, two features so far, and several more features coming in. In fact, right now, driving around somewhere in the Moorhead area is a group being funded by the Croatian Ministry of Culture for a film that will be distributed in Europe that is being completely shot in northern Minnesota because of the snow. That New York production company chose Minnesota because A, we have snow, and B, we have Snowbait. I just put some two gentlemen
Where
on
do
a
we
plane.
Have snow?
Pardon me? Yeah, that's and of course everybody wants me to guarantee that we'll have 2 or 3 feet of snow in March, which I obviously can't do this year. But I just put two guys on a plane before I came over here who are from $150 million feature called Jumper that's been shooting all over the world, and they came here looking for a school next to a river, and again, they want some snow. Some of what comes to my office is directly snowbait related. Some of it is the luck of the draw or the luck of our climate or whatever, but what I need is an incentive. I need snowbait because, frankly, without it, you're not even considered. And the thing that's interesting about what I do and how it relates to John is there have been several states that have looked at the afterglow of production and its effect on tourism. And the statistics that I've seen that have been compiled by other states are that when you are in a city or town that where a movie has been shot or a TV series has been shot, for years afterwards, you have a bump in tourism as a result of that, of people seeing that place highlighted in a feature movie. And the figures are anywhere from a 38% bump to a 25% bump. They are making signs right now in Montevideo because they're already having so many people call them and ask where the farm is, that if you saw Sweetland, Ali Salim's film that was completely shot in Montevideo, people are already coming into Montevideo wanting to know where that farm is. I mean, so they're making signs, and they're seeing a bump in people driving through Montevideo looking for those settings.
And Mr. Chair, I might ask you, lots of people coming up to see the range now?
Yeah. There's one scene in there where they had to block off one of the roads. I had to call the highway patrol to do it, so just so you know, I had a little bit of
it. We see you in the corner of it.
But you're not going to believe this. The bar scenes in North Country were shot in New Mexico. I can't understand that one at all.
Yeah.
Being a Tom and Jerry.
It's unfortunate.
And Mr. Chair, I'm getting the impression that it is just kind of a bidding war, a little bit like the stadiums where every state will put additional money into the stadiums and into the kitty, and this is kind of becoming a bidding war then.
Well, I think there's no denying that there's an element of that, but I think no TV series, movie, or commercial, there is no one factor that's always the deciding factor, and it isn't always necessarily that it goes to the lowest cost provider of a location. There's always the consideration of being able to pick up local talent. There's always the consideration of your crew base, the talent of your crew base, whether or not you have a functioning film commission that knows what they're doing, because we're the lead source of assistance to make their lives easier. But I also think that this is an industry that really does create middle-class jobs, jobs that people can afford to put their kids through school in. And if you have a vibrant film and television economy, which and commercials are just as important to that as our features, and frankly, our best moneymaker is going to be to get a dramatic TV series or two to shoot out of here. I mean, Chicago was totally bowled over by the economic impact of the show called Prison Break. Which shot at Joliet, which was just an empty prison anyway. So it was just a great turn for them to get it. But there is it would be an oversimplification to say either that it is, you know, that's always a money decision. A lot of times it has to do with the director. It has to do with your talent and your crew base and whether you have the location they need. North Country needed a taconite mine. I mean, that's just a fact. But I do think that it is also a fact that if you do not have a viable incentive program, you're not even at the table. And the fact is they're going to spend that money and hire those people somewhere. And we would like some of that business to be here because it's really good for our state in a number of ways.
And Mr. Chair, I'll just finish up by the film that was shot in Montevideo. The truck that they used, and I have to admit I never saw the movie, but was rented from a couple in Painesville, which is my hometown. So
right.
It was on the front of the Painesville Press.
Town.
So
right. You put up signs.
Yeah, I'll put up signs. Yeah.
Dinner Dibble.
Thank you very much, by the way.
It's a good movie, Mr. Chair. Sweetland's a good movie. I recommend it.
Yeah, it's a great movie.
It takes place in Olivia.
Did you see the... The truck that I'm
and the
talking
truck.
About?
It's a cool, it's a cool truck in that movie, Mr. Chair.
Any other questions? Sissy Spacek learned to make apple strudel on the upper range also.
He's telling me again.
Mr. Chair, are you and Sissy tight now? Are you like
no, I
this?
Never met her. I just heard the story that the women from the Slovenian home told me that she was capable of pulling the dough. The first time she tried it, she got it without making any holes in the dough, and they were really impressed by that because they've been making it for 20 or 50 years or whatever up there, and there's still some people who can't pull the dough without making holes, and they were really impressed that Sissy did it on the first try.
And Mr. Chair, the way we link North Country and Prairie Home Companion is that Woody Harrelson got up on the stage and said, "This That's is right. for all my friends on the range."
Yep, that did happen in Prairie Home Companion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, we're done with the fun stuff now. Go ahead.
Wait, are there any more questions? I thought tourism was a fun thing.
Any more questions on Snowbait? Okay, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So the Explore Minnesota Tourism Council had recommended increased funding to the governor. We put forth the initiative, and the governor, I just want to briefly talk about the recommendations for fiscal year 08 and 09. As I mentioned before, we had an 8.7 base budget for EMT in 07. What's recommended is a 9.7 million base budget funding for Explore Minnesota Tourism in fiscal year 08, with the additional $1 million potential public-private partnership funding also in 08. Then in fiscal year 09, the recommendation is, again, to continue that $9.7 million base, but then to increase the additional of additional $2 million in potential public-private chip funding for Explore Minnesota Tourism. Now, just a quick explanation on that public-private match. We were required as Explore Minnesota Tourism to generate $4 million cash or in-kind in order to generate these enhancement dollars. We received an additional dollar for a general fund for each dollar above $4 million with a $1 million cap. Now in this biennium, the match formula changes to require $3 in private sector dollars for each enhancement dollar received. And that was done for simplicity and again to leverage dollars from the private sector in order to earn that additional match.
Real dollars, is it in kind, or I mean, are those $3 that you have to get from the private sector, do they have to be actually cash, or?
Mr. Chair, those are half of it can be cash, and half of it cash, half in kind.
Okay, and how do you calculate it?
how do we calculate the dollars? Well, for instance, on the cash side, a lot of those dollars are generated either through if we're selling ads in Explore Minnesota Travel Guide or on the website, or if the industry participates in a sales mission and there's a fee for that, we count that as part of our cash match. Some of the or also from the grant program, the 60% private sector contributions counts as cash. The in-kind is a lot of marketing partnerships. We have written agreements, contracts with companies that agree to put our brand on some of their promotions and merchandise. And there's a value to that, and then we count a lot of that as in-kind. And so then all totaled, we're able to reach the $4 million threshold. So the increased dollars, I mean, the question that I would have if I were you, how are you going to use those dollars? And the increased money is specifically targeted for increased marketing and sales of the state. What we intend to do, what our council had asked that we do, is that to become more competitive with our neighboring states, we have to do more to promote Explore Minnesota, and that's exactly how these monies would be used. If these dollars are all utilized in our advertising budget, which is the intent, we would be able to go from a $3 million ad budget in 06, $4 million in 07, which is the current year, and then increase to $5 million in 08 and $6 million in 09, virtually a doubling of our advertising in 4 years. So I think while this is a relatively modest increase, those dollars are not intended to be used for administration, but they're intended to be used specifically to attract visitors to the state and therefore increase market share as well as leisure and hospitality sales.
How broad is how far do we out do we go from Minnesota with our advertising? Do we make it to Florida? Do we make it to New York? I mean, how far do we go with our advertising?
Well, Mr. Chair, it's both domestically and internationally. And domestically, we focus primarily on the north central region of the United States, and that is the core markets around Minnesota, Minnesota included, as well as the core markets of the Dakotas, Iowa, Wisconsin, parts of Illinois, and surrounding states. We are primarily a drive market. There's not as many people flying as there are driving to the state. We also try to keep Minnesotans traveling in Minnesota. In fact, we've been doing more marketing of Minnesota to Minnesotans in the year, last few years than we've done before. The reason is that if people leave the state, go to Wisconsin or another state, those are dollars that are lost on our economy. We want to keep Minnesotans traveling in Minnesota. However, the non-residents spend more and stay longer. So that's probably put a little bit more in attracting non-residents from the surrounding region. We also internationally market Minnesota. Obviously, our number one market is Canada. With the changing value of the dollar, we're seeing a big increase in the number of visitors from Canada. But then if you talk about overseas markets, those overseas markets include Japan, Germany, the UK, and the Scandinavian countries.
Have you been able to determine if the increased marketing in Minnesota has been effective to Minnesotans?
We actually do return on investment studies when we actually go back and ask visitors, people that contacted us to get a travel guide as an example, did you actually take a trip as a result of getting information, seeing our advertising? And then if they say yes, then we calculate, we ask them how much did you spend and how much did you spend on state taxes, et cetera. Then we compare that to the dollars that we invest. What we've been able to show through our research is that we get about a $4 return on investment, $4 in new dollars coming into the state. That's specifically just taxes to Minnesota as a result of what we spend to market Minnesota. And then if you add the total leisure sales as well as the number of jobs and things created, it even gets higher. But we do some calculation that proves about a 4-to-1 return on investment on our spending.
But is that on this expanded marketing program in Minnesota to keep Minnesotans in Minnesota? Is that 4-to-1 also?
It wasn't really differentiating, at least in my analysis, between non-resident and resident. As far as trying to attract more Minnesota residents to travel in the state, that was a result of really the changing travel patterns since 9/11. People weren't going as far as they were, and we needed to keep them home and keep them traveling. And what we would say, I guess the short answer to your question is yes, it has been effective because we've seen leisure and hospitality sales grow over the last several years.
So, but you can't really tell if it's from Minnesotans, though.
we can do some analysis of that, of the breakdown of the travelers, and compare that from years before. I don't have that information with me, but I'd be happy to get it to you.
Okay. Any other questions? Okay, go ahead.
The key measures, the things that we look at, I think it's in some of your budget narrative, is that this proposed budget will generate a potential $6 million in private sector match in fiscal year 08 as well as 09. And as I explained earlier, to answer your question, what are those match dollars? Those include things like, you know, actual revenue, corporate marketing, publication partnerships, and grant partnerships. And the last couple items I want to mention is that it's actually not, I don't know that it's in your packet or not, but included in our base budget is operational funding for the Film and TV Board. And that's included at a level of $250,000 each fiscal year, 08 and 09, to support the work of Lucinda and her staff to attract film to Minnesota. And in the 08, 09 biennium, it's basically the same amount as in 06 and 07. And then the Snowbait program that was asked about earlier, the governor is recommending to continue the success of the Snowbait program, so he's included $500,000 in each of the two fiscal years, 08 and 09, for the continuation of the Snowbait. And of this amount, up to $25,000 can be used by the Film Board for administration. So I'd be happy to answer your question, but in summary, Mr. Chair and members, the proposal for Explore Minnesota Tourism budget for the next biennium is a proposal of increased funding that's supported by our tourism industry, by our Tourism Industry Council. It's designed to leverage private sector dollars, rewards partnerships and innovation. Increased funding is intended to be used for increased sales and marketing of the state, and also included in the proposals continued support of the Film and TV Board and the Snowbait program. Mr. Chair, I'd be happy to answer any additional questions that you may have.
Senator Hander, you're welcome.
Mr. Chair, that's the one that made Representative Sertich famous. Helped accomplish that.
Which one is that?
Film Board.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that's right. He was in North Country. I didn't see him, but he says he was in it.
I couldn't find him either, Mr. Chair.
He actually pointed out a frame, I think, that he knew he was in one of the frames or something. So I don't exactly know, but honest. So are there any questions of Mr. Edmonds? No. Okay. Well, then I think we should have asked him something else yet. All right. Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Cap, our next meeting.
Mr. Chairman, we'll be meeting on next Monday and Wednesday. We have further budget overviews from the Housing Finance Authority, the Historical Society, and the Department of Labor and Industry.
That's on Monday?
That is next week.
That's next week. Okay. All right. If there's no further questions or comments, meeting
adjourned.
Go to Rochester.
Yes.
Gosh, I don't know. I got a lot of questions. Where's it going?